The Race Idea Critique of Racialist Philosophy and Esotericism in Extradition. Or Traditionalist? Hermeticism, Gnosticism, Jewish or Aryan Origin? The Philosophy of Becoming and Pantheistic Naturalism, National Socialism, Welt und Scorn of Gementum Evoda's Racial Doctrine, Christ Identity, Kosher Opera White Soup? Organicism, Emanationism, Being, The On, and the Jew Esoteric Hitlerism, Hitler, The Last Avatar and Manu, The Man to Come. Introduction. The concept of collective identity has existed throughout history in the mind of different groups who are now called human. The race idea is a self-reflection of the group as codified in its culture, which serves as a monument to itself, a presentation of its identity chiseled on stone, written on papyri, or painted on stone walls in murals or hieroglyphics. The race idea has stood the test of time and will stand insofar as what is called human exists on this earth in spite of all opposition and against all attempts to throw down or desecrate its monuments to itself, to burn its sacred scrolls or recycle its texts. The race idea will always exist insofar as race, perhaps better spoken of as species, exists. The race idea is defined within this work as the qualitatively distinct biological identity of a self-conscious sentient organism that exists as a plurality or collective of like beings, sharing the same appearance, mannerisms and culture, and participating in the same collective consciousness which serves to bind together its particular concrete forms in a unity. The race idea thus is not a psychological concept in the contemporary sense, but an actual ontologically real being which exists and has life in itself, which perpetuates itself through itself as an entelechia in Aristotle's terms. The way in which the collective identity has been codified in text and cultural aesthetics throughout history has not been entirely consistent, but has varied across the spectrum, at one extreme a purely materialistic conception of natural science devoid of all spiritual animation, and at the other extreme an idealized conception which, as it were, does not remain within the mundane dimension, but exists in some nebulous other world, rightly or wrongly conceived. It is the intention of the writer that the work serve as a clarification of the race idea as it has been conceptualized in philosophical and esoteric writings within the last 200 years, and that the reader will be able to avoid any of the pitfalls and snares of racialist philosophical dogma that the writer has stumbled upon in his own ruminations. Thus the aim of the work is to contribute to the project of Beng Klassen in straightening out the white man's thinking as regards the race idea, and to grasp it with an adamantine grip and to use it pragmatically towards the achievement of the survival, expansion and advancement of the white race in terror combat against the enemy races or species, the Jews and non-whites. Thought without action is sterile, and ideas which float in the ether without any utility in the theatre of the real, of this world, have no chance of realizing that end, what might be called the resurrection or rectification of white identity from its debased and involuted state of the Uyghur to the state of the Aryan, a high spiritual condition achievable only by the white race. The following is a critique of the racialist philosophy and esotericism of the luminaries of our race, but is simultaneously of necessity their writer's own understanding, and thus is not without error. The writer believes he has grasped the race idea as a sword from the stone of the common materialistic misconception, and hopes others may do the same, employing it in the combat to attain an Aryan victory, both in this mundane world and in the heavens. Tradition. Or traditionalist? The claims of the perennialists to have the capacity to critique modernism or non-traditional initiatic gnosis as it were from on high, from an Olympian height, are only in part correct and subscribable, as the perennialists are themselves what they critique, children of modernity. With regards to perennialism, it may be fairly spoken of as an attempt at most to reappropriate tradition, and only in some ways a successful one. specifically the attempt of René Guénon to critique modernity in light of his modernist construct integralism, is largely a failure as it draws upon the philosophy of modernity, philosophy per se, he himself declares not to be gnosis, but at best a compass for orientation towards gnosis within the purely human realm of rationalist cognition, of verbal-linguistic rationalist construction, of the anti-traditional philosophy of such as Thomas Aquinas, the father of Catholic theology from the 12th century CE, and the decayed remnants of what he propounds as authentic traditions such as Hinduism, Taoism and Islam. These pseudo-traditions were and are from their beginning a mere arbitrary syncretism of elements that were formed in the region through the hybridization of so-called racial stocks, in reality an amalgamation of species of bipedal entity who have become hybridized through rapine or voluntary inbreeding. Thus the crepuscular remnants, as Julius Evola spoke of these pseudo-traditions, are merely the shattered diamonds of prehistory which derive themselves from the Hyperborean stock and its polar migrations from the epicenter of Aryan Hyperborean expansion, and are at best the pieces of Humpty Dumpty that are required to be put back together. This must be done by the astute investigator, not of the profane scholar alone, but of the initiate who can understand the higher gnosis in the appropriate form, an inversion undergone from ivory tower and temple to privy wall and labor site. Thus Guénon, though an initiate himself, was initiated into a gnosis, which itself was a product of the Kali Yuga and had available only the same remnants of initiatic tradition to piece together. He erred in thinking that these remnants were authentic spiritual traditions of the tradition, the Philosophia Pernis, and thus wholly assimilated these pseudo-traditions as a connoisseur consuming delicacies with hot dogs and potato chips on the side, naively assuming that he could penetrate the veil of appearances and unconceal the truth with his purblind vision. In addition, his snide, contemptuous tone of know-it-allness implies that he assumed his assumed truth was truth itself rather than merely his assumption, and this he embodied in an authentic attempt at lived authenticity, forming a Masonic lodge called the Great Triad and becoming a Sufi via the doorway of Islam and living amidst Arabs in Egypt. That he lived with and even interbred with Arabs implies a lack of understanding of the Hyperborean tradition, and that only they who are pure may properly understand or embody the tradition, as they, the pure, and they alone, are capable of understanding and embodying tradition. That he himself, being a Frenchman who was admittedly like nearly all French somewhat mixed with the Arabs who had invaded their territory, may suggest why he assumed that such a path was authentic. No doubt it bore some fruits, but in the end, as can be inferred from his writings, it was an only partially successful attempt, and created confusion in the minds of many, especially those who themselves may have misunderstood his path and journey towards gnosis following that of Islam into the brambles of the theological dogma. Thus Guénon, welding the mystic philosophy with pseudo-traditions and their distorted texts, especially those which were derivative of earlier forms of what had been welded to them, followed one blind alley after another along the path of pseudo-tradition using the compass of pseudo-philosophy, and wound up with pseudo-gnosis, or at best a half-truth which itself created perhaps more darkness than light and generated more confusion than clarity. Truth clearly then does not lie at the end of the rainbow road of Guénon's corpus of perennialism, which is neither perennial nor seasonal, save being another instance of the season of the Kali Yuga. Thus we must turn from the dark alley of Abrahamic philosophy, of the false, gaslit cobblestone paths of Guénon, and head towards the more natural, organic and perhaps well-worn path of Evola. The path is one which most only understand at a new level of their being, and which awakens the blood memory should one venture along it. It appears to be a more rustic path, alongside of which grow the flowers of wisdom in their variety, and yet is oft-times crossed by the venomous creatures which lurk in the bushes, who dart out occasionally and strike at the unwary traveller. Thus one must tread this path with a high degree of alertness, and carry with him a stout walking stick and steel dagger in the event of footpads. This path is an upwards path which winds along its course to the heights, to the mountain top and necessitates both the will and skill to tread it along the craggy rocks of organic being, which one confronts in the process. The will to dare the challenges posed by an active engagement in the unknown wilderness away from the well-worn cobblestone streets of the temple, and of the intellectual aesthete who follows the path of Genon as a sacerdotal caste pampered priest, lying on silken cushions and amidst a surrounding of domesticity protected by the warrior caste over whom they superintends as a master over dogs. The path of Evola bears, as the writer has discovered himself through his own travails, the fruits of wisdom, again only imperfectly, and yet they are bitter berries that furnish one with the insight to head in the proper direction. Evola thus leads towards a summit of being for the adventurer that completes him as a person, a fully integrated person, and which leads him to the open arms of the gods at its peak. He critiques the currently extant institutions of religion and finds them lacking yet containing redeemable elements. Insofar he has a correct assessment of these and does not uphold or exalt them as tradition itself, he provides a concrete detailed map with which to navigate the world as it is and what navigator is, who is emphasized as a person, not a universalizable individual, be they initiate or profane, and this contra Genon, who affirms the non-essentiality of Rassel's special distinction and hence went the way of all flesh through further mongolization with an Arab female. Evola, contrary to this point, has evinced in such works as Synthesis of Racial Doctrine and Elements of Racial Education, emphasizes the essentiality of race as the being for whom tradition is, without whom tradition is not. A tradition can only be the tradition of a particular being and can never be that of all peoples, as no such thing as all peoples exists. Though Evola affirms that the mixture and crossings of hybridized mongrels are human, the writer affirms that the concept human is merely a modernist construct of 18th century Enlightenment philosophy, and that a tradition which is authentic can only be the possession of the authentic person, that is, an Aryan, as all others are crepuscular remnants and mixtures of the original Hyperborean stock. Thus it can be understood that Evola himself, being a Sicilian, a hybridized type, understood that tradition in all of its forms could only be affirmed and integrated into the degenerated stocks, and was thus a battle to oppose the further degeneration via mixture of the white race. Thus the path of Evola is a path towards clarity, and the map he has drawn is drawn with some confusion of lines and cartographic errors, but nonetheless is the best path to tread and must be trodden should one wish to salvage his soul and the racial soul of his race, his species, that of the Aryo-Germanic folk who inhabit of varying degrees in all subtypes of this once pure species. The task ahead is the recovery of tradition, and the traditionalists may assist in heading in this direction towards the authentic tradition of the authentic original race, and may lead to a further rectification of the fallen subtypes, and from thence a positive orientation towards a spiritual upliftment along the path towards the summit of Aryan mankind, the path of the gods towards the Olympian heights. As to other modernists such as the Aryosophists and other Nordic neo-pagans, the value of their work lies in the attempted reconstruction of Nordic spirituality, however it is itself looking through a glass darkly, taking for its sources those who have become intermeshed with Christian ideology such as the Eda, and are sparse and difficult to come by, and thus not the best as a starting point from which to venture towards the heights. Thus the Nordicists, though pointing their compasses northwards, employ a map which is completely different topography, and thus fail to reach their destination of necessity, the map not corresponding to the territory, and the territory itself having become shifted and buried in the dust of time. Thus the better path would be a rigorous investigation into the original formation of the Egyptian and Sumerian tradition, both presumably colonies of Atlantis, as means of recovery of Aryan tradition, the earliest sources wherein whites were the initiators of the culture, and this also in the most ancient sources of Tibetan Bompo, and Indian and Chinese spirituality will enable one to gather the metals with which to construct the key to the tradition. It must be remembered that still yet living traditions are discoverable on the earth and can be found in the territory of the Yazidis in modern Iraq and the Balkan regions, which still have vital rites and a spiritual tradition that may enable one to understand the tradition of his ancestors. Hermeticism, Gnosticism, Jewish or Aryan origin? A question arises as to whether what is called the royal art is or has been a product of the creative genius of the Aryan or of the Jews, whether it has been corrupted or distorted along the course of its history, and if so, how so? The tangled web of history is the cobweb that must be cleared away to reveal the truth behind its grey and tenebrous veil, and this with the hermeneutical broom of scholarship guided by the penetrating vision of the seer and of the initiate. The writer contends that the initiatic sciences of alchemical transmutation are the property of the Hyperborean and have their place under the sign of the swastika, which points towards eternity and truth, and which marks out the path of transcendence for the Aryan both as individual person and as a race, and enables his upward journey towards the stars. Miguel Serrano, the esotericist and anti-Jew Chilean diplomat who existed in the circles of such luminaries as Leon Dingrill, Savitri Devi, the Dalai Lama and various original National Socialists, and who died in 2009 after a life of initiatic wisdom and teaching embodied in his esoteric Hitlerism, has forged the key to unlock the sinister mysteries of Jewish intrusion into a Hyperborean gnosis through his magical dream language scholarship. He reveals in coded language the upward path of the Varma Marg and the counterclockwise direction back to Hyperborean along which it lead. Serrano thus equips the Aryan aspirant with the tools of initiation, or at least brings him towards the threshold of the mysteries of Hyperborean Gnosis. The schools of the mysteries are derived, if ever an origin could be fixed, from the North Pole in a distant bygone age, and have radiated outwards from this centre like the swastika across all points of the globe and of now, owing in large part to the poisoning of the pure blood of the Aryan via Mongolization. Thus most of the mysteries have been submerged in the tide of mud and have become syncretized with the primitive cults of hybrids such as the Mongols and Negroes and their crossings. The history of secret societies is the history of history, just as the history of race war undergirds the societies work for their race or against, and all mixtures of kinds express themselves in syncretism in the mysteries. The Jews, themselves, being a mongolized synthesis of disparate kinds formulated as an extrapolation of their consciousness, a syncretic madness which may be called the Jewish Kabbalah, from out of the pre-given Kabbalistic elements that they managed to assimilate into themselves through their bloody trek through the ages, in Samaria, in Babylon, Egypt, Greece and Rome, perhaps in their origins from India as well, and through the world, subsequently creating a universalized hybrid artificial construct which they have overlaid upon the organic mysteries of the indigenous Aryans in whose countries they have worked their way in. These Aryan mysteries were through history always oppositional to the other and never inclusive, save during periods of decadence brought about through the Jewish purchase of titles and or being granted citizenship as loan sharks useful to the nobility. Thus the Aryan has become subverted and the mysteries have become perverted under the influence of Dre, who has introduced his own chaotic syncretism and most importantly his particularistic tribalism into the mysteries as means of crowning himself king and of inverting the power dynamic, with himself becoming the head and the Aryan the tillion the relationship. Thus it can be concluded from the above that the mysteries of today are a tangled Gordian knot of Jewish agency in large part, and have now become subordinated to the supremacistic tendency of Dreho, have taken the secrets of the temple and have perverted their usage in harming and enslaving the population. They have made the mysteries into a veritable iniquity, and along with their Christian Safav hoodwinked their Goyim slaves to bow before them under the pretext of bowing before the Jewish God, who is merely a simulacrum, a hologram before whom the broad masses have been coerced to subordinate themselves. The Christian Siop is defilement of truth, which represents itself as having a monopoly on truth, but is inherently false and ingrains itself into the consciousness of the population, portraying true knowledge as devilish demonology and keeping the peasants as laity, enchained to the master Kate, who obscure all light from the mind of the true gods of the earth. Gnosis is available to the few, but the parasitical Jew makes bold in characteristic arrogance to claim it is his own creation when it is that of the Aryan, an inheritance by blood and through purity of blood through which he and he alone may discern truth and pull aside the veils of appearance that enable his transcendence from this material prison that the Jews and their servants the modern Freemason who exists as a Shabbos Goy spiritual Jew-a-liar, thief and murderer just as the Jews themselves and who voluntarily sells their soul and jeopardizes their racial soul in service to the Jews themselves and carry a suit whatever agenda they impose upon him. To wrest the mysteries from the white-gloved hands of the Judeo-Masons and Jews must be the task for all Aryans as means of elevating the consciousness of their kind, of spiritualizing the racial soul and attuning it toward God, the absolute, not the false deity of the Jew world order which is exalted as the unquestionable one and only all questions leading towards being burnt at the stake, but rather the God of the Aryans the Allfather, solar Uranian archetypes, hypostasis of the Skfather deity who exists beyond the spatiotemporal conditions of the transient phenomenal world. For those who would uncover the mysteries they must look into them through the dark glass of modernity and to strengthen one's vision they must avail themselves of such sources as Julius Evola and his critique of the degeneration of the world and of culture and also that of René Guénon and Miguel Serrano as means of straightening out one's thinking on these issues. No one else may offer any sufficiently detailed insight at this present time on this Gordian knot of the mysteries and how to disentangle the skein so that one may finally make true progress, not progressivism, towards the Olympian heights, not the depths of the bog of Dre, where their sinister rites are carried out under cover of darkness and bathed in the light of Luna and in the flow of blood of their vampiric practices. In order to combat Dre and their vile rites they must be exposed in the light of the sun, and this through a rediscovery, through an unconcealment of the diamonds which lie in the shiner bog of the demonologists, their syncretic tellurism born of the depths and obscuring the light. The war is a spiritual war, and those who either deliberately place scales on their eyes such as Christians rendering oneself blind to the light of truth, or who adopt the perverse practices of Jewish distortion of their ancient Aryan traditions will simply sink into the bog, and to whatever degree of their influence settle down into the bog their own racial soul further submerging it from the light of day. A spiritual reawakening is necessary to fight against the dark forces, and this comes in the form exclusively of a disentanglement of the Aryan gold from the Jewish dross and to purify the alloy into philosophical gold. Many attempts have been made and are being made to achieve this purpose throughout history such that a veritable golden cord has continued from its origins and has preserved the tradition to some extent, though it is still confused. Organizations and figures other than Serrano, Guénon and Evola include the SS Order of the Third Reich, the Thuggesellschaft, which preceded its formation, and the Arminists who attempted to revive a variation of Nordic Teutonic spirituality exclusive to themselves. The Order of Nine Angles, a Jewish government-created siyot, being another example. These attempts have admittedly failed or they are mere inventions, continuances of modernist syncretism without any legitimate foundations in any Eurasian group or culture save a romanticized Nordicism without adequate depth or foundation upon which to base such practices. The Armin and Futhark and other forms of Runyoga etc. appear ludicrous and formulated in many respects and have no correlation with any esoteric principles of the occult anatomy such that they might amount to a transmutative influence on the mind according to occult principles. Thus they are mere pageantry and theatre that leads astray the consciousness of the population towards the artificial. However, they touch upon elements that are valid such as the runes and contain directions or paths that might be better beaten down and made accessible to the appropriate types of persons susceptible to these same. Thus this tradition is tradition in name only but is an attempt presumably sincere which leads or assists in leading towards a rediscovery of tradition. The most trustworthy sources are not those which have been rediscovered in the far north, the original land of Hyperborea, but rather those which may be uncovered from the warmer regions, where the syncretic mixtures have not completely obliterated the traces of the original mythos and correlative mysteries. Papyri and bas-reliefs, cuneiform tablets, temples and statues are the most ancient sources and most trustworthy. Hence Sumeria, Egypt and the Mediterranean, as well as the Balkans and Central Asiatic region, are those most worthy of investigation in their most concrete form, and a synthesis thereof will help to untangle the Gordian knot of the Jewish distortion of Hyperborean gnosis. The philosophy of becoming and pantheistic naturalism, the philosophy of Nietzsche and later variants are schizophrenic. On the one hand, they entail and prescribe, albeit elusively, a racialist Volkus Weltanschauung, and simultaneously entail a pantheistic naturalism that aligns itself with the Near Eastern tradition of the mother, the pantheistic worldview for the Middle Eastern oneness that is perpetually preached as a moral imperative. This latter transforms only slightly into liberalism, and its New Age variants, which all carry the torch off the Oldian, only subtly modified to suit the contemporary context, the Oldian and the New all preaching unity, equality, oneness, and undifferentiated Volkshaus. This is something that is accommodated by the Nietzschean worldview, as a philosophy of becoming and transformation of the self, all concerning itself with the raceless individualism. At least this is how Nietzsche's work at first appears, though it was expropriated and distorted by Jewish translators and pseudo-scholars. Nietzsche in Ecce Homo, his autobiography, referred to his ancestors being Polish nobility. The potential saving grace of Nietzsche lies in this and other references, such as to we Hyperboreans and similar statements regarding the ancient Aryan caste system, etc. All of this accommodates a racialism, and yet this philosophy of becoming, of transience, is compatibly with the pantheism of Spinoza, in many respects the only difference being its dynamism and not its rigid Egyptian-Jewish structure, one might say Parmenidean, though it would better to call it what it was in its origin, that being the Jewish distortion of the Egyptian religion, presumably or possibly even earlier variations on this theme. The Jewish religion is all about the mutable and the chaos of this world, with an overlay of a religious dogma of inflexible top-down control emanating from the on in a Neoplatonic sense, such as with Philo the Jew, who was a great lover of the fatalism of his ego projection born of his own chandal constitution. Self-love, the gaze of the chandal into the vanity mirror of its consciousness manifesting itself in the Jewish demiurgos or creator and his children, the Jews. Nietzsche's philosophy is that of immanence, and not a transcendence of immanence, of becoming, but a harnessing of the forces of becoming, and a utilization thereof for the purpose of empowerment of the self for the creation of the Superman, the illuminated on presumably. This is the self-creation of the practitioner, the initiate, and as such his conception philosophy is Masonic, the lesser mysteries being the realization of the self as illuminated one or Lucifer. This is quite a Masonic conception, and Nietzsche's many poses for photographs in a Masonic stance suggest he may also have been one, just as his relations with such Jews as Paul Rhee and Lou Andreas Solomwow was presumably assigned him as a project to steer in the direction of the Jewish elite, such as the Frankfurters, Warburgs and others in Germany at the time. The schizophrenia of Nietzsche suggests itself in his crude slander of the Germans and his attempt to deny the profundity of their culture and his exaltation of the barbarity and Dionysian nature of the Greeks, who were Dionysian only during their decline and fall, during the Hellenistic, that is, Jewish Near Eastern phase of decay that brought about the supplantation of a healthier Roman stock of Doric Aryans who conquered the Ephetian Dionysian Greeks with their Sol Invictus. The Apollonian principle Nietzsche castigated in his older writings, while under the influence of the intoxication of his Jewish honey traps perfume. Indeed, the Jus Kalevi edited the entire corpus of Nietzsche's works in English, and many of his were, and indeed are, translated into English by Jews such as Walter Kaufmann, etc. The fact that Nietzsche's works are kept around and promoted even at this late time in the Jewish white genocide agenda suggests they are at the very least using Nietzsche for their agenda of transmitting the philosophy of becoming, of the tradition of the mother, of pantheistic naturalism. This might be a use of Nietzsche in an abusive form, violating his authentic conception and philosophy of the superman, of will to power, etc. But the writer concludes that such a conception is basic illuminist doctrine in a philosophical form, a threshold into the lesser mysteries, and is an anti-Christian subversion presumably used to play off against Christianity with other similar contemporary doctrines such as Darwinism, Hegelism, Kantist positivism, Stirnerism, Marxism, Spiritism, Theosophy, etc. All either crudely materialistic bioanthropological creeds or Luciferian egalitarian creeds. A similar creed occurred with such as Martin Heidegger, the National Socialist philosopher who, though a member of the party, was a student of the Jew Edmund Husserl and was romantically sexually involved with Hannah Arendt, his student, the more or less Marxist Jew who wrote the book The Totalitarian Personality. Perhaps this is another instance of the honey trap that Jews pawn off on those goyim who initially possess a racially oriented creed and are then used to manipulate and distort their genius towards the Jew's ends as a neutralization policy. Heidegger's philosophy follows from Nietzsche's as a philosophy of becoming, which is perhaps compatible with racialism, but does not explicitly affirm a racialist creed save perhaps at certain points making oblique references to Jews and the concept of authenticity, that being a recognition of and living as oneself in his differentiated manifestation, that is living as he is, existing his essence, in the words of the plagiarist communist Jew Sartre. The philosophy of Heidegger is an immanentism of agnostic Luciferian variety, which posits existence as a being in the world and denies transcendence, attempting to associate it with a mere conception that derives from the logocentric tradition and Christianity. Thus both Heidegger and Nietzsche, as well as their affiliates, promoters and forebears, are serving the Luciferian agenda of race-blind universalist pantheistic naturalism, a representation of the mother goddess tradition, of the sum total of all things qua immanence, transience, and oneself in relation to that perpetual void of chaos as a consort of the mother goddess, an Osiris, a Baal priest, a Lucifer, a priest of the order of Melchizedek. This is Jewish priestcraft in a nutshell, the agenda for the formation of the God-man over others. This is the Superman of Nietzsche and is almost certainly that of the Jew. The comic book, which began just after the passing of Nietzsche and during the ascension of the fascists and National Socialism, Superman, by the Kabbalist Jew Jerry Siegel, is the archetype of Jewish messianism, the Jew qua Superman, the master race overall. Perhaps Nietzsche and Heidegger also were agents who had their healthier instincts distorted by the Jewish honey traps and sponsors. Perhaps the Superman was simply distorted by Jews such as Jerry Siegel. And yet the tradition of the mother goddess and her consort Baal Osiris Dionysos Lucifer Watton goes back a long way into the misty pasts of time. Pantheistic naturalism is clearly a Jewish religion and a Jewish construct that has served Jews for millennia during the entire course of the Pisan Age, of the Kali Yuga. What is truth then? One must dwell in eternity to find out, for dwelling in transience of this world results only in the chaos of becoming and the trafficking with entities that render one an Illuminati, a possessed being that has sold their soul for the false promise of philosophical gold.